Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Still awake?
Yes.
Talking a little bit about the nature of Mahashivaratri. The focus of most Hindu festivals is on attaining the blessings of the deity to benefit our external life. Human nature, what it is. Mothers are praying for their daughters to get married. Husbands are praying that their business enterprises will be successful. So we're going to the temple on most festivals and trying to get the deity's blessings to help our and other members of our family's life go better, right? It's very common. But Mahashivaratri is a different type of festival because we're beseeching the blessings of God Shiva to benefit our inner life, not our outer life. It has a different nature. So I'll just touch on what I went in more detail on last year, and that's the idea of new moon and full moon. That most Hindu festivals are right before the full moon, right? And the full moon is a time when the energies are such that it blesses your external life. Whereas Mahashivaratri is right before the new moon, and the energies of the new moon are such that it's conducive to your inner life. Oh, one of our devotees wanted to put her house on the market, and we said, you have to wait till after Shivaratri. Shivaratri is not a good time to put your house on the market. So you need more external energy. Shivaratri is a good time to meditate about putting your house on the market, but not to actually do it. So those energies are called Nivritti and Pravritti. Pravritti is when energy is flowing out and benefits our external life. That's most festivals before the full moon. And Nivritti is turning within. It's when energies naturally are withdrawing. So Gurudeva, for example, his Mahasamadhi was right before the new moon. Which makes sense, right? For a great yogi, that their time of passing would be at a time when the forces are in maximum withdrawal mode. I don't know, that's good. The importance of Mahashivaratri is underscored by two teachers in our own parampara. It's my understanding that Paramaguru Yogaswami only allowed the festivals of Mahashivaratri and Ardha Darshana to be celebrated in the Sivasonda Nilayam on KKS Road in Jaffna. So he's giving importance to just two festivals. They're both Shiva festivals, and they're kind of different. Mahashivaratri is going within, and Ardha Darshana is more getting the blessings at the full moon time for our external activities. Came across an interesting perspective a few years ago. There was a group of followers, small group of followers of Kashmir Saivism I met that are in the Los Angeles area. And one of them explained that we're different than other Hindus because we just focus on Shiva, and the only festival we celebrate is Mahashivaratri. So that's like a North Indian Saiva tradition. They're just totally focused on this festival, Mahashivaratri. And of course their guru is Swami Lakshmanju, now deceased, so there's no guru in that lineage anymore. He's quite a character. I have a quote from him. So he uses the word Bhairav, which is short for Bhairava, which is a form of Shiva. Kind of a protective form of Shiva, very common in Kashmir Saivism to see shrines for Bhairava. It says, I am Bhairava, and the entire world is my offshoot. Whoa. He claims Shiva is the only great God and all others are his manifestations. So that's what Gurudeva was talking about. Interesting, that ties in with Gurudeva's audio. He was saying that Shiva, what does Shiva create first? He's just by himself. He creates the gods. That's his first creation. Then the gods create their helpers, and then Shiva creates souls. So Shiva creating gods is exactly what he says. Shiva is the only great God, and all others are his manifestations. God is the inner being. The entire world is his external being. Or as Gurudeva would say in his tape there, his external dance. So the monastery receives a few Vedic astrology newsletters, and one of them had a good description of the kind of practice that's appropriate for Mahashivaratri. This is current, so from her point of view, there's a few difficult months coming up. In anticipation of some possibly difficult months ahead, we have the auspicious opportunity to do sadhana on Mahashivaratri. This Hindu holiday is seen as perhaps, qualifying it, the most auspicious day of the year to do spiritual practices. We would say, definitely is. Meaning their benefits are greatly enhanced by the astrology as well as the collective prayer that will be happening. Nicely said. Gurudeva gives this description in Dancing with Shiva. Mahashivaratri is the night before the new moon day in February, March. We observe it both as a discipline and a festivity, keeping a strict fast and all-night vigil, meditating, intoning Shiva's 1,008 names, singing his praises, chanting Sri Rudram, bathing the Shiva Linga, and being near the Vairagis, which means the Swamis, as they strive to realize Parashiva, which is the highest aspect of Shiva as absolute reality. So that sets a nice background on the nature of Mahashivaratri. And in terms of my particular theme, the theme is Mahashivaratri is a good day to turn within and strengthen our inner spiritual identity. Inner spiritual identity. So going to explain in the next section what that means. Many people start out in this life with just one identity, which is their external identity. They think, I am a person who has a body, emotions, intellect, and will. That's who I am. Different individuals focus on different aspects of this human external identity. Many people simply focus on their body. How they look is who they are. Others identify with the emotions and memories of their mind, and still others think they are the intellect, the reasoning part of the mind, and the willpower to successfully accomplish their plans. Hinduism, of course, teaches that that is not all you are. You also have a spiritual identity, your soul, commonly referred to in Sanskrit as the Atma. Furthermore, Hinduism stresses that this second identity, the soul, is actually who you are. I noticed this a few years ago and I thought I'd include it in this talk. I found it interesting that both Gurudeva and his guru Yogaswami start their respective writings stressing this very point. You are the Atma. So Yogaswami's writings, they're collected up in a volume called Nachintanai, which means good thoughts. And it's a collection of both his songs, primarily his songs, but also some of his letters to actual people. This is Yogaswami's first letter, which is entitled, Who Am I? Of course, in Tamil is Nanyar. And reads, You are not the body, you are not the mind, nor the intellect, nor the will. You are the Atma, Ni Atma. The Atma is eternal. This is the conclusion at which great souls have arrived from their experience. Let this truth become well impressed on your mind. But there is one thing to which you must give attention. Never swerve from the path of Dharma. Let it be your practice to regard every life as the holy presence of God. He is both within and without. Then we have Gurudeva's first sloka from Dancing with Shiva. Who am I? Where did I come from? And the answer given is, Rishis proclaim that we are not our body, mind, or emotions. Sound familiar? Sounds like they both coordinated on what to say. We are divine souls on a wondrous journey. We came from God, live in God, and are evolving into oneness with God. We are in truth the truth we seek. Om. So that's the first idea. For those who are interested in spirituality or in religion, they don't just have their external personal identity of body, emotions, mind, and will. They have an inner spiritual identity as well. So we're dealing with two identities. The next idea is that not only are we the soul, and not the body, mind, emotions, and will, but that the core of the soul is one with God. So this is a different idea. The core of the soul is one with God. Gurudeva states this idea in the 28th sloka of Dancing with Shiva, which asks the question, how is our soul identical with God Shiva? He answers, the essence of our soul, which was never created, is immanent love and transcendent reality, and is identical and eternally one with God Shiva. At the core of our being, we are already that, perfect at this very moment. Om. And he explains further, the core of the subtle body is para shakti or satchit ananda, immanent love, and at the core of that is para shiva, transcendent reality. At this depth of our being, there exists no separate identity or difference. All are one. Thus, deep within our soul, we are identical with God now and forever. These two divine perfections are not aspects of the evolving soul, but the nucleus of the soul, which does not change or evolve. From an absolute perspective, our soul is already a non-dual union with God, but to be realized, to be known. We are that. We do not become that. So Gurudev is explaining a key concept, which is that we're already one with God as omnipresent consciousness and transcendent reality. Nothing has to happen for this to be the case. It's just that it's at the core or the nucleus of our soul, and we're not able to go there. Most people aren't able to go there. So it's like a treasure hidden within us that we're not able to access at this moment in time. But that doesn't negate the fact that it's still there. We don't have to do anything to be one with God. We just have to find that part of us that's already one with God. Makes it sound easier, right? Like a treasure hunt. interesting, this next quote from Yogaswami. I started this talk about, I think 3 days ago I started writing it, and I stuck in this next quote from Yogaswami. And then this morning, as is customary, I go over to the Yogaswami shrine after the monk's meditation is over, and I open Words of Our Master, and I open to this very quote that I had stuck in the talk. I said, whoa! Must be important. It's so simple, but it's so profound. You and I are one. Eternal bliss is already acquired. That's his way of saying you're already one with God. He just says things so simply, you might miss the point. He's just saying eternal bliss, ananda, is already acquired, and you and I are one. So if Yogaswami and you are one, that means both of you are in this core nucleus of the soul. That's the only way both of you can be one. And if you're there, then eternal bliss is already there. Thought it was a nice way of looking at that. Oh, the next quote from Gurudeva, it's the idea of the sun and the earth. And two celestial bodies. And in this case, the earth represents our external human identity, and the sun represents our internal spiritual identity. That's what we're working with here. When one looks at the earth and the sun, one thinks more of the earth than of the sun, which is so far away, right? So that's like here we are. We think about our external human identity much more than we think about our inner spiritual identity, and our inner spiritual identity feels like it's very, very far away, like the sun. Yeah, that's the starting point for where lots of people are. Traveling through space toward the sun, the earth fades into a distant speck, and one contemplates the sun as it looms larger and larger as he draws nearer and nearer. There is no intellect here, you see, for the intellect is connected to the earth in its exterior ramifications of worldliness. It's a nice phrase. Huh? Exterior ramifications of worldliness. That's our ordinary thoughts. The devotee's path is to merge into the sun. The devotee's path is to merge in the totality of his awareness, willpower, and life force into the self, God, Shiva. Shiva is the ancient name of the self, God. Mystically, she, the syllable S-I, is the absolute state. Va is the all-pervading self flowing through the mind. Those are the Shivaya Nama that's in the Panchakshara. So Shi and Va are the first two letters of Shivaya Nama. I'll read that again. Mystically, Shi is the absolute state. Va is the all-pervading self flowing through the mind. So those are the two aspects of Shiva that also were at the core of our soul, Shiva. It is only when the devotee, through yoga disciplines under the direction of his Satguru, traverses the thought strata of his mind that he begins to experience what he has been learning philosophically. So that's pointing out the two steps. First, we have to, when it comes to Hindu truths, it's natural to first learn about them intellectually. At the core of the soul resides omnipresent consciousness and absolute reality. Please memorize this. Okay, but we haven't experienced it, right? So what Gurudeva was distinguishing, well, first we intellectually learn it, but then to actually experience it, a guru is very helpful. Then the sun, his Shiva, the self-god, blooms paramount before his vision. Earthiness, worldliness, humanness, instinctiveness fade into a speck within his memory patterns, and like the astronaut hurtling through space toward the sun, awestruck as to the impending annihilation of the remnants of his identity, the devotee piercing his inner depths awes at the magnificence of Shiva. Nice, inspiring quote. But to try and bring that into a more practical statement, that's more an inspirational statement. Well, so we're saying we have two identities. External personal identity and the internal spiritual identity, which is the soul and the essence of the soul. And when we start out with our practices, you know, we could take some numbers. Say we're 90% identified with our external human nature and 10% identified with our internal spiritual nature. That'd be about right for someone who's getting going. They know it's there, otherwise they wouldn't be motivated to practice. Well, the goal of Hindu practices is to gradually shift these percentages so that the spiritual identity increases and the human identity decreases. Or you start out 90-10, 85-15. 80-20. I bet you enjoy numbers. You're increasing the inner percentage and decreasing the outer percentage. So there's a quote from Gurudeva on that very point. When the mind has resolved all of its differences through worship, penance, dharana, concentration, jhana, meditation, then the inner, which is stillness itself, is known. Then the inner is stronger than the outer. Boom. That's like 55 on the inside, 45 on the outside. 45-55 split. So the inner is stronger than the outer. That's good. That's kind of a tipping point. When the inner identity becomes stronger than the outer, then the outer takes on a different... what would you say? The outer is handled in a more contemplative way. Gurudev explains that point. It is then easy to see every other person going through what has to be gone through during his or her particular stage on the path. Opposites are there, but no opposites are seen. This is why it is easy for the wise, made wise through spiritual unfoldment, to say, there is no injustice in the world. There is no evil, no sin. And I have a quote from Yogaswami to include this section. So for those of you who don't know, Yogaswami, our Padma Guru, in his latter years, broke his hip. He was playing with the cow, and the cow got rambunctious and knocked him over, as cows can do. Our cows have knocked some of us over sometimes, and it's very scary. Big cow up there, you're on the ground. So he was in the hospital for a long time, getting his hip repaired, and because he was older, it never healed to the point where he could walk. So he was kind of in a wheelchair, and you see some pictures of him. He looked a bit disheveled sometimes. His hair was all up versus how he looked really put together and kind of fiery 10 years before or so. So this is a statement he makes in that point. This, meaning Swami's illness, is a gift. Okay, he's ill and he says it's a gift. Well, why is it a gift? Karma must be gone through. So it's a gift because it's a way of going through karma. Then he makes the point, which ties in, I have no connection whatever with this body. Oh, he's probably 95-5, right? He's as far identified with the inner as you can go with and still have a physical body. So he's just hanging in there. I have no connection whatever with this body. So it's a beautiful statement which shows what a great soul can do in terms of the inner reality is just all he thinks he is. And he happens to still have a body, but doesn't really relate to the answer to the question, who am I? See how early on time. Okay. 3 more minutes. Okay, got time for 2 quick points. Well, how do we change the percentage so the inner becomes greater and the outer becomes lesser in our sense of who we are? Well, the answer that I give here is every time we connect strongly with our inner spiritual identity, we increase our identity with it and decrease our identity with the external human nature. So strongly. So for example, if on Shivaratri we have a strong inner connection with our inner self, that's going to lessen our identity with our outer self and increase our identity with our inner self. That's what happens. So by strong connections, we automatically change this relationship of who we think we are, and we become more the inner and less the outer. So Mahashivaratri is an excellent time to accomplish this, as was explained at the beginning. And then a quote from Yogaswami that I used in a recent publisher's desk called Claiming Your Omnipresence, if you haven't read it. Claiming Your Omnipresence was January, I think. I think it's in the January issue. Kind of an outlandish title. Trying to get attention. Claiming Your Omnipresence, why not? Yogaswami's quote points out part of the challenge. He says, I am everywhere. He's omnipresent consciousness, right? That's pretty good. You are everywhere, but you don't believe it. So we have to convince ourselves that it's really true before we can find it, right? It's natural for human nature to kind of say, oh, I'm so flawed, I did this, I did that, I'm just couldn't possibly be divine being on the inside, and then a core that couldn't possibly be identical with God. You don't know what I've done. But it's true for everyone. That's the point, is we can't let any negativity that resides in our external nature about who we are negate this great truth that inside of us, in our soul, we are already one with God in terms of omnipresent consciousness and transcendent reality. Thank you very much. Time is up. Oh, no,